Okay, if I can draw everyone's attention to the start of the meeting and begin with our opening statement. Council acknowledges that we meet on the traditional lands and waters of the Paramangangana people. They are custodians of this ancient and beautiful land, and so we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We'll care for this country together by ensuring the decisions we make will be guided by the principle that we should never decrease our children's ability to live on this land. We have no apologies. We do have two currently with absences, Mayor Wisdom and Councillor Grant. We do have a request for a leave of absence for Councillor Parker that we'll just requested now. Someone like to move.
That's April. Sorry, 30th
April.
Was April. Yeah.
I was happy to because it was the 12th day.
No, I should do it now.
All right, thank you. So, Councillor Gilgill had to move that way. Seconded. Councillor Mudge, all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We have no one absent. So, next we move on to the minutes of the previous meeting. Councillor Pascali, you wanted to seek leave of the meeting to make a short personal explanation in relation to this.
Yes, thank you, Andrew. You actually.
And which, sorry, just can we have leave of the meeting for that? Cheers.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. If I had been in the meeting, I would have declared a material conflict of interest in relation to 19.11. It would have been in relation to a property on that item, and I would have stated it. So I just want to put on the record now that I had a conflict of interest there, even though I wasn't in the meeting.
No, thank you, Councillor Pascal. Speaking of conflicts of interest, does anyone have a conflict of interest they would like to declare? Councillor Munch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I would like to say that I have a general conflict of interest in relation to item 13.2, land purchase at 8 St John Road, Norton Summit. I'll explain it more before the item, but I will leave the chamber at that.
Thank you, Councillor Mudge. Any other conflicts of interest? Right. Then we'll move on to Mayor's opening remarks. One quick point. Oh, minutes, previous meeting, sorry. Oh, because we actually get it. Thank you. Is Councillor Pathai saw their meeting for personal explanation, but we didn't actually deal with minutes. Councillor Hamney, happy to move as printed. Thank you. Councillor Chiva, happy to second. All those in favour, please indicate. Bargain. Yeah, is carried unanimously. Now we can move on to opening remarks. Just what one is kind about how fantastic that Amy Gillett discovered played White Whale event was. I attended all three locations at different points in the day, and it was always really busy and really quite enjoyable. Got to talk to Mary Kay and Amy Gillett's mum about a range of issues to do with the bikeway, and it was really pleasing, particularly to see so many children using it, providing that safe space for them to learn to ride, particularly in the hills, where there are not many flat spaces for them to learn to ride. So, yeah, for me, it was a fantastic event, and I thank the staff for all the months doing so well. Okay, so we move on to item 7, questions adjourned and questions lying on the table yet. The question adjourned listed at point 10. So we'll just move through the petition deputations and public forum first. So we do not have any petitions scheduled and we do not have any deputations scheduled. We do have a public forum. We've got this virtual from the Sterling Business Association who would like to speak to us in relation to that. So if you'd like to come forward, the microphone in front, there's a little button at the front. If you click that, it'll light up red. And you have 5 minutes to speak to the chamber about the issue. You could just state the location of where you live and also what you intend on speaking about, and then for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, so my name is Sarah Birchall, and I'm the chair of the Sterling Business Association. So I'm in Allgate, and I have two businesses. I have Cleveland Nursery, and then I have Cleveland Home on the main street. First of all, I just wanted to say a big thank you. I don't know if any of you in this room attended, but the RSL put on a public forum for the community to talk about the Woolworths site and also the struggling businesses, and then a few other items on the agenda. So I'm here as the representative of all the businesses in Stirling. We find ourselves in a very difficult position. No one knew that Woolworths, one, was going to burn down, but two, it was going to have such a severe impact on our business community. So what I'm here tonight, so Leith has reached out to me, also with Brett, who sits on the SBA with us. He has done everything in his power to be able to help the businesses in the capacity that he had. But now we're looking at going that little bit further and seeking support from council for some financial help. So a lot of the businesses are extremely down in figures, some up to 40%, but most on average is around that 30% down. And if anyone here has been ever in business, cash flow is everything. And when that cash flow is not coming in, it starts to become quite scary. So we're seeking some financial support from council to try and alleviate some of the stress on our businesses, just so that we can get through, you know, it may be 3 years before Woolworths is rebuilt. So in that meantime, we want to try and have a viable Main Street, which is currently under threat. So any support from council would be definitely welcomed. And I think it would be a really good goodwill gesture as well to say you're actively out there and, you know, helping the businesses of Stirling. We don't want to see a change in the Main Street, but unfortunately the reality is if we can't turn things around, we're going to have a lot of businesses closing. So that's what I'm here. I'm here to fight for the businesses of the area and the Main Street. And I know just from that forum and from the Courier, which was awesome, the article, it had a bit of reach. So people are concerned, they're coming in, they're definitely actively talking about it now, but we need to get that bit further reach and really get into the letterboxes and the homes of every single local community member, because without their support, like I say, we're not going to be there. So I appreciate anything that council can do for us. But yeah, I just seek help on behalf of all the businesses.
Thank you. About 2 minutes if anyone has a quick question. Councillor Herman.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I was unaware, other than the other end of the council, I was unaware that one would like to attend that. Did you have anything in mind discussed that council might be able to help?
So for us, council got some funding together with the state government, which put on a night here, and they're also carrying that around the Adelaide Hills Council for training in how to improve your business. And although that was fantastic, and we really genuinely appreciated that, because we can always improve our businesses, the fact is that's not the issue. It's the foot traffic that's the issue. It's people actually not coming in. So again, looking at financial help for marketing, because marketing is expensive. So trying to engage marketing for locals, marketing for interstate, and also on the plains visitors coming up into Stirling. So that would definitely be a very big help. And then it's just maybe working with council to have a 12-month plan of events. You know, what can we do as a community to start putting on regular events that are bringing people into Stirling, which then in turn people start spending. So financial help in regards to just paying bills. You know, we all have bills to pay, so, you know, financial help in that way. But, yeah.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Have you had any...
Because there's really only 5 minutes available. I'll allow Councillor Parkin to ask an additional question and then we'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Through you, Jeanette. I did attend the workshop before and it was really interesting and presented really well. Thank you. The question I was going to ask is whether or not you spoke to LA Hills Tourism about partnering from a marketing point of view, because, you know, we do know that people come up to Stirling because it's beautiful. My husband was on a bus the other day and there's a lot of people coming up just to hang out in Stirling for the day. So I guess we just need more of that. Like, is there other organisations, obviously council is one, but are there other organisations who can help contribute?
And that's definitely on our agenda. So we've engaged a man from Main Street, Australia, and so we're working really closely with him right now to gather information about our demographics and all of that sort of side, but also the marketing side of things. So that's definitely a help from the Courier article. We had a local who runs his own marketing business to reach out to us. So again, he's definitely passionate about the local community and working on a contra deal for us. But also I'd love to be able to provide him the financial to say thank you, really, to help. But as far as the tourism, I think they've had a change in CEO, so I haven't actually managed to reach out to that the new CEO of the Adelaide Tourism, but that's definitely something we're going to do. So, look, I will engage in anyone that will listen and anyone that help. And I was talking to someone from the Flurio today and thinking, you know, maybe we could do something with them as well because, you know, cross-promotion, I think, is key for our whole region. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
So we do have no presentations. Sorry, Councillor Munn, for quite lengthy over 5 minutes. But we do have an adjourned item. So just to recall, we had a mover and a seconder in relation to this item, and it was adjourned by Councillor Herman. The process is that this motion would resume from that point, but before we sort of get to that, I just want to ask Ms. Gill, do you have any additional new information you'd like to provide to the table? Okay, so it is my understanding that Councillor Cheetah was seeking to withdraw that motion, and the way that that can occur is with consent of the mover and seconder, and leave the meeting that motion can be withdrawn. So, firstly, Councillor Cheetah, do you consent to that?
I do.
Thank you. Do you agree? That's the point. So I'm leaving the meeting to withdraw what was currently the item. Okay, so with that in mind, we now, I guess, have an open ability for someone to move a motion in relation to that. Councillor Boyd, you think maybe you'd like to move something. Can you?
Yes, I would. I'd like to move option one.
As printed in the agenda.
You scroll down and be able to see the table there. And that is to undertake a further trial of 1 year.
Sorry, just a point that I was talking about earlier, and I apologise for interrupting. I just wanted to, like, this item can impact on us personally in different ways, so it is important that the decision we make, we articulate, is being made for the benefit of the community and the organisation, not us personally as an individual. We can obviously refer to our circumstances to some degree, but that needs to be in relation to how it impacts on our ability to make decisions and speed for the benefit of the organisation. So I just wanted to make that point.
So I'd like to move option one to undertake a further trial of 1 year while reverting to one ordinary council meeting a month and two workshops or professional development sessions. One of the main reasons I'm putting forward a 1 year trial of one council, one meeting a month, is because two meetings puts a large amount of stress on staff. We had the same amount of meetings finishing after 10 p.m. having one or two meetings, and the number of council decisions were similar. The burden on staff for two meetings per month is substantial, and it costs twice as much to run two meetings per month. Councillor attendance is less for two meetings per month, and now that we have a year's data for two meetings a month, it would be difficult to assess the effectiveness of one meeting a month unless we get comparison data for 1 year. Some councillors have also had things, commitments like CFS once a month, so that works well with having one Tuesday off a month. And finally, councillors and staff get to have one night off per month. Now, I've also heard councillors say that they don't really care about the meeting arrangements, so I encourage them to give you support this motion. And we can see the table there, so that would be how it would work. And structuring the meeting as above has the following advantages. Everybody knows that we have the first trip Tuesday off, so it's good for planning. And having the ordinary council meeting in between the workshop and professional development sessions allows for more flexibility with possible special council meetings. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Councillor Boyd. I have a second in relation to that. Okay, so that motion has lapsed. Would someone like to move something different? Councillor Gill.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I'd like to move that one
that the trial of two ordinary council meetings a month has concluded. Two, that the meeting schedule resumed to pre-trial timings of second Tuesday of the month, being information briefing or workshop at Woodside. Third Tuesday of the month for personal development, information briefing or workshop at Stirling. Fourth Tuesday of the month, ordinary council meetings at Stirling. Fifth Tuesday could be used for community forums, and the first Tuesday could be left free unless required for special council meeting.
Okay, so just to check in relation to that, so the wording is correct, you're moving the equivalent of option one with the addition of trial two meetings is concluded.
Yes.
Switch of the PD and ordinary meeting.
From the fourth Tuesday to the third Tuesday and ordinary council to fourth Tuesday.
And are you indicating that you don't want it to be a trial?
No trial.
Okay, so you would state with point four that the following be implemented for the duration of current council term.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was about to get to that.
Okay, I'm just making, I just want to try and work with the wording that's
going
to be before. So yes. So it's just point five saying that the folly be implemented. Sorry, just down at point five.
That one?
Yeah. The following be implemented the duration of the current council term.
Question. Yeah, my question is in a year, if we find between us that this is not working, do we have the option to bring it up at that stage and say we'd like to change our meeting arrangements?
Yes, we can.
So
I mean,
and we do a trial, but we can bring it up.
Well, this is saying the duration of the council term.
Yeah.
Obviously, that can be changed by resolution council.
Perfect.
Okay, so does everyone comfortable to understand the intent of what's been made? Okay, Councillor Gill, would you like to speak to the motion?
I'll look through you, and me. When I first started on council 5 years ago, that was the schedule that we had. Our community members and all their association actually had their meetings to actually allow us to have those meetings on Tuesdays, and we had their meetings on other nights. What I have found since we had the two meetings a month trial is it's been increasingly difficult to actually get out to some of those community meetings to actually engage with the community, so I actually have a better idea and understanding of what they actually require from me as a representative on this council. I believe that this schedule actually worked for this council for over 20 years. I don't really see that it should have changed. But we've had the trial, and I think it's time to just, okay, if it didn't work, we had more hours sitting here to get about the same amount of resolutions put out. And I think this makes it a lot easier for people to be able to plan and administration to be able to plan for when we have special council meetings. I also believe that it gives council and administration a bit of time off rather than always running and doing another agenda. It puts a lot of pressure on doing it two agendas a month, and they have a fortnight between them. And I know from my own personal point of view, it's been increasingly difficult to actually bring two agendas a month because I'm trying to actually get in contact with my community. And doing that 2 months, those two council meetings a month has been quite stressful and has actually made me isolated from my community rather than being part of it, which is what I'm actually on council to do. So I hope someone will actually support this motion, and I'll look for a second, but thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gill. Does anyone like to second? Councillor Boyd, would you like to second the motion?
Yeah.
Do you want to speak to it?
This motion.
Just,
sorry. Yeah, I'd like to thank Boyd for this motion.
Councillor Gill.
Sorry.
Just because we're in a formal meeting.
Yeah, certainly. That's fine, not a problem. It picks up my wrist. It actually still covers a lot of the concerns I have. I feel encouraged that if it's not working for us, we have an opportunity to change it or revert back to what we've just tried in the last year. I think it's worth a go, particularly because we've got quite a few council members in the team, so that they can experience this timetable and see if it works for them. So I commend the motion. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to speak to this motion? Councillor Cascarne.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor, I support this motion because I don't think it needs to be another trial. You're actually just reverting back to what you have always done. We went through the two trials. I was in favour of two meetings a month, and I think that the staff and the executive have presented a fairly well-rounded explanation as to why two meetings a month is being a burden on the council. I would... And I don't really want to complicate things, but I was in favour of actually the chief executive officer investigating how we conduct our workshops and policies and how we can actually improve our ordinary meeting duration and our procedures. And I don't want to complicate that, but I would like to put that into motion.
So my understanding is that Councillor Gill was still moving those additional points. Will we just
adjust it? Okay, thank you. Yeah. Then on point 12, just take out the end where it says we did the 12-month trial.
Yes, that's a good point. Thank you. Would you like to speak to anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
I would just want to provide one point of clarification with regards to the two versus one meetings a month. Historically speaking, the council has only had one formal council meeting a month, but prior to last term, they did have what was called the SCDPC, which was a monthly meeting of all elected members. And that monthly meeting was in relation to all policy and planning related matters, and that occurred out of Woodside. So just for people who have not experienced that, just letting you know that that was historically the case. Would anyone else like
to ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Well, since that's a format that's new to me in this term, could we include that in the report?
The SPDPC has been abolished. when the new PDI Act came in, that changed things quite a bit in relation to how we dealt with the dog. So that committee was set up primarily for health and policy matters. So at our formal council meeting here, we would not deal with policy, it would occur at another meeting. But,
okay, thanks for the explanation.
That's okay. Councillor Osterstoke, you'd like to speak?
Thank you. I won't be supporting the motion, as moved by Councillor Gill. The 12-month trial of two meetings a month was a success, an overwhelming success. It was a success because I've done an analysis here of 6 months, from the 14th of February to the 25th of July. The vast majority of those council meetings, there was a total of 2 of them. One went to 10:24, the other went to 10:30 p.m. The vast majority of them finished between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. On that fact alone, the trial was an overwhelming success. It was designed to reduce the amount of time that we spent here in the chamber. As opposed to finishing at 10:30 and adjourning matters off to another date, that didn't occur in that 6 month period that I've just alluded to. The other advantage, a key advantage of considering two agendas a month is the agenda length. Personally, I would like to read an agenda of between 200 and 300 pages a meeting, as opposed to 500, 600, 700, or even 800 pages. On one occasion, we did receive an agenda of 800 pages long. So I think from a decision-making perspective, it is much more efficient It is much more desirable and it is much more workable to have two meetings a month as opposed to one for the reasons that I've outlined. On tonight's agenda, we have, I think it's a half a dozen motions on notice. Now, if we had, hypothetically, one meeting a month, and there is a delay, clearly, between formal council meetings, the amount of motions on notice that we could be considering could quite possibly be doubled. And on top of that, monthly, we would have to deal with the business of council. Now, I think, logically, that two meetings a month has worked very well with this council, and it is not reinventing the wheel. There are many metropolitan councils in Adelaide that operate on the basis of two meetings a month. Granted, sector-wide, given that there are a myriad of regional councils, logically they operate on one meeting a month because they're a lot smaller and have a lot less business to conduct. But in the metropolitan area of Adelaide, as I understand it, the vast majority, and I stand to be corrected, operate on two meetings a month. If they can do it, we can do it. If our if their staff can do it, our staff can do it. It's not reinventing the wheel. On the facts that are before the council, the trial was an overwhelming success. I won't be supporting the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Stott. Anyone else like to speak to this motion? Councillor Punch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I won't be supporting this motion either. And I just wanted to make some comments about the report, and these are notes that I did for the meeting last time, but they're still applicable. I think the analysis in the report was okay, but I think there are a number of points that I think need to be made. I don't know about other elected members, but I always spend significantly more than 3 hours at ordinary council going through the agenda. If you remember, the report said that when I was looking at the time spent, that councillors would only spend 3 hours on an agenda. In fact, if I was to only spend 3 hours on the agenda on an average meeting, I would consider myself thoroughly unprepared for a meeting, even with a smaller meeting. The act of reading the agenda is much more than one of skim reading the reports. There are always significant attached documents to read and often background research to be done on various issues and preliminary positions on issues to be decided. Sometimes questions need to be drafted and emailed to start. Sometimes significant effort needs to be given to writing notes or full text speech on an item for multiple items. The main reason 12 months ago I supported a move to two meetings a month was not primarily to reduce the meeting time, although that was a factor. It was to reduce the amount of preparation time on average through smoothing out the workload through the month. As a person working full-time in a relatively demanding professional job, it is very daunting to get home after a long, hectic week to be faced with up to council stock almost 800 pages. I thought we did actually have one which went over 1,000 pages, agenda.
It's
1,200
pages,
yeah. Well, yeah, so we had a massive agenda. To go through and lose 1.5 to 2 days of a weekend, as well as doing constituent work and having some family time. So it's very, very daunting to have that sort of reading to get through. I've found that having two meetings a month has made the workload of meeting preparation more bearable, and I personally think the quality of my decisions and potentially others has improved. I also think that the quality of the governance and oversight this chamber provides to the workings of council has improved as members have more time to consider issues. The count of meetings that have finished after 10 p.m. has been somewhat distorted, and we've talked about that in the report. By the proceedings of the December and January ordinary council meetings, that were only one meeting in both of those months. So December and January both went over 10 p.m. If everyone remembers, so both of those meetings dealt with extremely difficult issues, probably the most difficult of the 5 years that I've been on council. And if you were to take away these two meetings from the statistics, there would have only been two meetings that finished after 10 p.m, a drop of 50% on the previous 2 years. And you also need to remember that because we were having two meetings a month, we have had twice as many opportunities to go to 10 p.m. basically. So I think it's actually been quite successful. I think the quality of our decisions has improved. The governance and oversight that we've been able to provide to council is better. I oppose this motion.
Thank you. Councillor Sedgwick, do you want to speak to the motion?
Thank you. I also won't be supporting this motion tonight. I, as a new member, don't feel like I need any comparison with the two meetings a month. I feel like I can look at the first year of the last term to see the length of the meetings and the length of the agendas. I did actually go into have a look at some old agendas and, yeah, that's full on. So I would much prefer to have two meetings a month. I think it's also important to remember that we've been really agile in the last year. There's been quite a number of motions that have come to us that are very time dependent and have needed a decision quickly, and we've been able to schedule that in with our existing schedule rather than having extra special meetings. I do find special meetings in particular very difficult to deal with to manage my own workflow. I feel like they're unpredictable and when they're going to happen. And I know I've worked into my personal schedule how I can manage reading an agenda for an ordinary meeting, but for a special meeting that can be difficult. And I do think that for us to deal with those time-dependent issues that come to us, we will need more special meetings if we go to one meeting a month. So I won't be supporting the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Sedgwick. Councillor Parkin.
Thank you. Yeah, I basically agree with councillors Selwood, Osterstoff, and Martin. I don't want to repeat any of the things that they've said, and I agree with the things that they've said. But one of the things that I have found has really worked with the two meetings of month is really the quality of the debate and the decision making. One of the issues that we had in the previous term when we had one meeting was that sometimes we would have issues that required really quite intensive debate, often towards the end of the meeting when we're all tired. And when you're all tired, it's not the best time to have debate that can be, you know, contentious. And it doesn't lead to good decision-making. And it didn't lead to really good objective conversation. And I think that's really important. That's what we're here to do. We're here to actually discuss and debate issues and do it well. Sometimes when we had one meeting, we were encouraged to debate less because people wanted to finish, or to ask less questions because people wanted to finish. And that's not democracy. That's actually not in the interests of good decision making. And that was one of the primary drivers for me to support a two-meeting paradigm, so that we would have time and space to have the debate that we need to make good decisions for council. So for that reason, I'm not going to support this motion, because like the others, like my colleagues, I do believe that it is working. I don't believe it's perfect, but nothing's perfect. And I've also said that I'm not going to die in a ditch over this, and I'm not. I'll support whatever decision we end up making. But for me, I like the space to have the debate and ask the questions. I also like not having massive agendas, and having time and space to be able to read those agendas. I'd also like to note that we've always filled up our Tuesdays. That's never changed. Whether we fill it up with a workshop or whether we fill it up with a meeting, we still filled up every Tuesday. The time difference that we're actually committing hasn't really changed at all, actually. So for me, I'm not going to support this, but if it ends up going ahead, I'll support the other. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Parkin. Would anyone else like to speak in relation to this item?
Just briefly, I was also going to raise the issue of what quality of decision is made at 10:30 at night. After, I'm fortunate I don't have full-time employment. I work hard all day, travel 3/4 an hour to come here, and still sitting around at 10:15 to make that decision. I might feel my judgment might be worth it. The other issue about having two meetings a month, quite often governments will write to the council for an opinion or a comment on a proposal or something in some legislation or whatever. Invariably, they give a very short time frame. And I do recall where a response has had to go in by a certain date, and there hasn't been a council meeting where it's done with one system, where then the report come back to the council for endorsement. So really, the council can't disendorse a report that's already gone forward. So I see that as a shortcoming. However, I'm open if we go for one meeting a month, I'm happy to support that. When I sat down and considered this, I had to think, try to split into two categories. How does it affect me as a person? That's important to me and my family. And how does it affect the community? We're elected here to make decisions for the community. And I've come down on the best way to serve the community is to have those two meetings a month. And I'll manage my personal life accordingly.
Thank you, Councillor Herman. Councillor Chair.
It's tricky one. It really is. I just want to put that out there. There's no denying the challenge of personal circumstance, which as Councillor Herman pointed out, does intrinsically impact on your capability to serve your community. For some, we have such a beautiful variety of elected members in here who have very different opinions, have very different thought processes, lived experiences, lifestyles, a range of different things. The challenge I have in supporting this particular motion is partly the open-endedness of it, but I'm aware of what two meetings looks like to this chamber, with this elected body, with the administrative staff we have, and it's hard for me to look at what we've been doing for the last 12 months and saying it's not working. If we were to revert to one meeting a month in this form, I do have some concerns on whether it is going to achieve outcomes. And although there are probably challenges on both sides, and I've, through many conversations, fought both battles in my head on both sides, I am aware that what we've done for the last 12 months has yielded results, as painful as it has been for some. Now, I have mentioned this previously. I do check my privilege as well as we go along, my time availability compared to others. But similar to Councillor Herman, I really had to make that decision in my head on what I think is right for the organisation as a whole, and as difficult as it was to take some of that personal obligation, I do feel, because I do see the impacts of two meetings a month on the individuals through the entire organisation all the way through. So in acknowledgement of what I think has been a successful 12 months, and without the knowledge of the experience of what one meeting would look like, and whether we have the capability or capacity to do what we've done over the past 12 months with one, I'm unable to support the motion this time.
Thank you, Councillor Chair. Councillor Hux, would you like to speak? No, that's fine. Councillor Gill, you're right to reply.
Thank you, through you, having me. I'd like to understand from the councillor's point of view how he compares 528 staff admin hours to 869 staff hours as being a benefit or a success to this council. I'd also like to know how the council expresses the increase in providing meals for an extra meeting a month that we didn't used to have. Is it cost to this council? Is it cost to our community? And when we come to do our budget, these costs have to be found somewhere. I'd also say I'd rather sit 50 or 60 hours a year and get exactly the same amount of motions out and decisions made as opposed to sitting here for 84 hours a year to get exactly the same result and outcome for our community. Now, councillors have absolute control as to how long we sit in this chamber, each council meeting. They can have the decision not to speak if people have already made their points of order. But everyone here loves to have their go. Oh, one councillor said what I was going to say, but I'm going to say anyway. And so we draw out debates to fill time to make sure we get to that 10 o'clock.
Councillor Gill, you can't, there's no, you can't say that they're doing it for that reason.
All right, I'll withdraw that. But I have sat in enough of these council meetings over 5 years to have seen the behaviours. So I know what I'm talking about. We have the opportunity as an elected body to get to 10 o'clock and not extend time. But there have been many councillors in the previous council that are still in this council now who will more than likely extend time just so they can have the extra time to try and get through their work, even if they have 2 meetings a month. If I look at these comparisons, we've had no increase really in the participation attendance rates of councillors to special council meetings, information briefings and workshops. What that tells me is that really the 2 meetings a month have not worked. All it's done is given people time and more time to put in motions on notice, put on questions on notice. Now, I have 3 motions on notice tonight. That wasn't planned. I actually put these motions in back in December for the December meeting. They have been delayed and just postponed while I have dealt with staff to help them understand and work through making these motions better. So unfortunately, they all landed on the same night. But that was not a plan. And in fact, if I go back to the email that I sent to the CEO and the mayor at the time, I actually asked them to spread over because they weren't time dependent. So all of us as council members have actual got control over how much time we spend here. We have to have more discipline in how we actually act within this chamber and how many questions that we ask of staff in this chamber instead of asking before the meetings. I have read those large agendas, and yes, they do take a bit of time, but they are not the rule. They are an exception. And they usually only occur at the start of a council term, while we're sorting out all the stuff that was put on hold while we were in caretaker mode. So I would still hope that some councillors will support this motion. And I'll rest with you.
Thank you, Councillor Gilbert. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. Those against, the motion is lost. We obviously need to make a recommendation or make a decision. Councillor Osterstock, you would like to move something?
Thank you. Option two from the report. With some amendments.
And what would the amendments be?
The following be commenced as of the 13th of March 2024 and conclude at the end of the current council term.
I assume then that you down at point 12 or the second to last point in this particular motion, you would also like to remove the 12-month trial.
Yes.
Do you you still want that to occur though, the CEO to investigate ways in terms of policy considerations?
No.
No? Sure. That's your motion. So it says
the authorised to amend any policy. Yes. Sorry, include that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you.
Consequential amendments to policy and procedure may flow.
Yeah.
But all other aspects remain.
Okay. And just bearing in mind, we've obviously had a fairly robust debate in relation to this item. So I will not restrict debate, but just be mindful that if you're making the same points you just made in the last debate, perhaps they do that. Just, yeah.
Question?
Councillor Gill, I think, has a question.
Oh, I'll wait for someone to second that, actually.
Okay. So would you like to speak?
No.
Councillor Lodge, you'd like to second?
Yeah, I'd like to second it. I think this is a much better resolution. I think this worked well.
And Councillor Gill.
I'll be voting against this motion, and I'll say why. I have a long distance to run home, and this council is actually in breach of its duty of care to me by making me drive home at 10 o'clock at night in the dark at any time. But you can have that because you only live 5 minutes down the road or 10 minutes down the road. So don't worry, you don't have to worry about wildlife and kangaroos or anything else jumping out at you or bad weather or anything else that may affect travelling home at, for 45 minutes, nearly 100 kilometres to go. So just think about that next time and hope that I don't have an accident that will be on your conscience.
Councillor Gill, you can't state that.
Was that directed at me or the council as a whole?
It was directed at the council as a whole.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Would anyone else like to speak to this motion? Oh, you got a question?
But yeah, of course. I assume there will be a meeting on the 26th.
Correct.
Under that, yeah.
There's already 10 items in the pre-motion. Councillor Huffstead.
Very basic question. Why do you have the first Monday of the month as a workshop? Why is it not all Tuesdays?
Actually, historically speaking, part of that reason is for the CFS commitments, because for the different areas, the different regions, they have their training on different nights, and that at least enabled, no matter where you lived, you could attend at least one per month. Yeah.
Good question.
Anyone else like to speak? Okay, then right fine.
No.
Okay, debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. Those against, that is carried. Okay, moving on to questions on notice. So there were three questions on notice. With responses provided, I will request that if there are any additional follow-up questions, they be considered questions without notice or via email. So if you have a follow-up question, we'll do it with questions without notice.
At the end?
Yeah.
Okay, I do. So
let's have
a question without notice.
So we'll move on to item 4.1, which is motions on notice, which is Councillor Mudge's motion. Would you like to speak and seek a seconder?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. There was not a lot to say, really. Sunday the 15th of October was a pretty devastating day for the community of Stirling, and particularly the traders on the main street of Stirling, when a major fire destroyed the Stirling Village Mall. And this, other than impacting just the businesses that were involved, including Woolworths and the traders in the mall, has subsequently been shown to have affected the business of other traders through a reduction in foot traffic. And I thank Ms. Sarah Birchall from the Stirling Business Association for putting their impact on it. I first became aware of the drastic extent of that at the Stirling Community Forum, which occurred a couple of weeks ago, and subsequently there was a front page article in Courier about it. At the forum, Sarah mentioned that some of the traders are down by 50%. On what they were trading at before the fire, because they're just not getting the foot traffic coming past. This was a very catastrophic event. And while we like to think that our library and our council chamber is the beating heart centre of Stirling, I think that actually more was probably more of a beating heart sort of commercial centre of Stirling. And whether we like it or not, Stirling is also, I guess, the main commercial centre of this end of the council district as well. So it would be really bad if we were to experience significant failures of businesses in this area, in this main street, due to the impact of a catastrophic event. So what I'm asking council staff to do here, and I'm actually moving it, sorry, I forgot to mention, I'm actually moving it in a slightly amended
form. That's weird.
So if you have a look up on the board there, I've added in temporary financial and or in-kind support. And this was at the request of council staff. Brett Main rang me and said he would like a bit more flexibility if he's doing the investigation to actually look at in-kind support. In my discussions with Sarah about this, she's still pretty keen on the potential for financial support, because sometimes when you're a small business owner, only you can sort of really understand what's most useful to you, and now getting something that helps you pay the bills, pays the electricity bill or something like that is something that you need. But having said that, sometimes council might be able to provide support at a cheaper rate than what a business owner might be able to get it for themselves. So essentially I've included the possibility of in-kind support as well as financial support to traders. The key thing about this support to me is that it follows the two T's. It's temporary and targeted. So it's not, you know, massive subsidies to businesses forever. It's temporary and it's targeted to those who can demonstrate they have experienced a serious downturn in their business as a direct result of the fire. And I see it as an emergency measure similar to the support that council gave to victims of the Cuddly Creek and Cherry Gardens bushfires. I think from Cuddly Creek we had an allocation of $120,000, mostly to give potentially give reductions in rates, rebates and things like that. I don't think we used that all of that in the end, but we certainly allocated some money. And I see this commercial fire as being a similar sort of thing at a lower scale to one of these. So it's targeted and temporary. And I'd like to say that if we lose a significant number of businesses on the main street of Stirling, it's going to hollow out the whole of the central business district of this part of the council. And it could take years and years and years to recover. Small amount of proactive investment and support from our council and other businesses and donors, this council may be able to prevent a wider economic impact on our region. So I commend it much.
Thank you, Councillor Parker. Would like to second and speak?
Yes, thank you. I would like to second the motion and I would like to speak. Thanks, Councillor Lunch, for bringing this motion. I also attended the meeting in Stirling and you know, heard about the pain that Stirling businesses are experiencing at the moment. I think it's probably, I'm definitely supporting the motion. I think it's pretty important that we discern which of the downturn is due to the fire, and we also have had an economic downturn as well, so that there's, you know, businesses, small businesses suffering in a number of places. So, you know, it would be interesting to do the comparison of, you know, downturn in Stirling to downturn in Cheddar Woodside, for example. We might find that there's a bit of a downturn everywhere. So trying to determine what is a result of the fire and what is a result of economic circumstances would be interesting. Also, I do know that there are a number of state government programs which can assist with things like marketing and that run intermittently, so it might be worth investigating if there is state government programs that we can hook some of these businesses up with. But certainly, I commend the motion. I also loved some of Sarah's ideas around getting some marketing around, you know, focusing on our tourism, and some of her concepts around events and things out of the way as well. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing the outcome, and I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Bowman. Councillor Ossetel, you'd like to speak?
Yes, thank you. Could I suggest that the mover and seconder consider a variation? My variation that I'm suggesting is in number one, Stirling Main Street small businesses. Yeah. Thank you.
So just, yeah, have you leave the meeting to approve that variation?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congrats. I've been in the invitation. People put their hands up. Thank you. So that just means that small has been added in as a variation. The agreement, the mayor and seconded Lee.
Thank you.
Do you like to speak to me?
Yes, I do. And my rationale for that suggested variation, small businesses is defined by the Australian government as a business employing 15 people or less, with a annual turnover of less than an aggregated annual turnover of less than 2 million, and indeed 93% of an aggregated turnover of less than 2 million, according to the government website. And 93% of businesses are small businesses with an annual turnover of 2 million. We don't want to be giving potential rebates to banks and other multinationals that may occupy the Stirling Main Street. That wouldn't be very Australian. So hence my variation of small business. And I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Osser. So would anyone else like to speak? Councillor Cheetah, you have a question.
Yeah, President's statement. I'll make a statement of question mark at the end.
Okay.
Just considering some of the points that were made by Councillor March around trying to keep and from our public forum, Sarah, around the trying to keep Stirling the way it is, I guess there's some consideration that could be had around, you know, a bank as an example. That although they are a large multinational, the viability of keeping staff at a branch in Stirling with a downturn may suddenly see the withdrawal of the bank as well. So it's just some concerns around those impacts as well. So although they are large multinationals, their decision making around whether that business is now viable in Stirling. If a bank were to disappear, just like Woolworths disappeared, is that another reason that people came into the township? I'll turn this into my speaking to the motion.
I generally
support it. I do also have a question to know if the wording in there was other considerations such as differential rating, but also looking at whether there can be some holding on the part within the rate for Stirling Business Association, allow the association some respite or to have a target there. Council's contribution will be
I guess 2 points. One is yes, I would say we look at differential rates as that would be a natural lever to be looking at if you're seeking financial support. Second one around the SBA, none of that money actually comes from the council. That's sourced from the businesses and then redistributed to the SBA. So I think that would be
within the rates, isn't it?
Yes, it's a separate rate.
Yeah.
But it's not the council contributing that money, that is coming from the businesses. And I anticipate that on that SBA to be active at this point in time in particular. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? No? Councillor Munch, would you like to write and comply?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, look, thank you, councillors, for your support for this motion. I just wanted to make 2 points. One was in regards to determining how much of the downturn in turnover for the businesses is as a result of fire and how much is general downturn. I think that's essentially what the job of council staff is generating this report, is to come up with some criteria so that we can actually do that. And I also wanted to explain some of the history behind this. At the community forum, one of our ratepayers stood up and suggested that a council consider a rebate on rates to businesses in the main street with given support. The problem with that is that many of these businesses are not landlords, they actually are renters, and there's no guarantee that that rebate or that support will be passed on to the renter. It would be a mug landlord that didn't, but there's no guarantee. And from an administrative perspective, I think that just providing some direct or indirect in-kind financial support directly to the business is much easier to do. So I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Munch. So the debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. Those against, that is carried. So we'll move on to item 12.2, Councillor Gilley, kind of motion in relation to information briefing sessions. I'll just draw the chamber's attention to a slight variation in what you intend to move. And if you would like to speak to your motion.
Thank you. Having two meetings, council meetings a month, as it's changed out, we're going to. And as that resolution in the background points out, I would like to make sure that councillors and elected members actually make the same commitment to actually turn up to workshops and information briefings as the staff have to. We already asked them to do extra work for the two council meetings a month. It's, you know, I feel quite frustrated from council staff when I turn up to an information briefing and there's three people there. And the staff actually outnumber us. I also think it's a good idea to actually help us show that we are actually doing our jobs. Without having attendance actually recorded anywhere, people just go, oh, I can't be bothered. It's too far to drive. Or they just aren't interested in the items. I've added that there should be full or partial attendance, as I'm aware that some councillors will leave once information items that they're not no longer interested in or are registering have been done and they don't have any interest in the following items, and that's fine. But I think that our community needs to know that we are just doing two council meetings a month and then it's ignoring the actual work that needs to be going in to actually get the information from our administration to find out and be educated on those items that we're about to make decisions on. I think it is important and that these actually also be recorded in the annual report along with our council meeting attendances and special council meeting attendances.
Okay.
I am a big supporter of the council administration. I'm also a big supporter of making sure there is a work-life balance for elected members. So I do understand that it's not always possible to attend all these meetings. But I think it should be at least acknowledged and recorded, those that make the effort and those that can't. And it might also give us some actual information about whether, you know, who are those people who can't attend and is there something else we should be doing to assist them to actually be able to attend those meetings. We can't have that without hard data. So this is about asking to look at getting some hard data to make some decisions about how we actually look at information briefings, workshops, and professional development and make that more equitable both the council administration and the elected members and make it actually worthwhile and get those attendance levels up to over 90% as we've got as in our performance indicators.
Thank you. Councillor Gill, someone like to second the motion.
One question.
Sure.
It does pertain to my decision making to snapping, but
sure.
With the wording that's on there at the moment, the in terms of online attendance,
that would be included.
That would be included.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll second the motion.
Okay, would you like to speak to it?
No, it's not.
Thanks. Councillor Silver.
Thank you. Yes, I will be supporting this motion. I believe that transparency is always a good thing in government, any level of government. But I do think this is also good for accountability. So recently there was a cultural awareness training at one of our information sessions, and it was an amazing insight into First Nations culture, and there were only four of us that stayed the entire meeting. It was really disappointing that person had been brought in to talk to us about some things that they held dear and how their culture is impacted by the decisions we make in this place, and only four of us are there. So I think if this motion can help keep us accountable and maybe make some more people attend some of those sessions, I think it's worthwhile. So that's for the mission.
Thank you, Councillor Selwood. Councillor Parker and then Councillor Lunch.
Thanks. Yeah, I've got no issues with the principles behind this motion, but I was wondering whether the Labor would consider an amendment to also include attendance rosters for those of us to give our time on other panels as well. So there are those of us on council who attend more than just meetings and workshops. We attend CEO PRP panels, we attend Boundary Commission panels, we attend recruitment selection panels. And so that's not necessarily the intent. That attendance isn't recorded anywhere either. So I was wondering if the mover would consider amending the motion to include the attendance on those as well.
The attendance for committees, section 41 committees, are reported in the ABP.
Oh, okay. So can they be collated in some way and reported?
My initial thought in response to that, for example, with the water committee and the DRP, they might only meet 4 to 6 times a year. So it wouldn't make sense, in my view, to have it as a monthly reporting, but I feel it does sit well with the ABP. But it needs to be guided by the chamber if they feel something else is more appropriate.
Okay. I think, yeah, there are more of those committees as well. There's, you know, recruitment panels. You know, COPRP has definitely met more than 4 times a year in the last year. And that impacts as well. So I think sometimes it's important that to be visible. But, yeah, I...
Well, give the mover and a second time to consider. Okay. Any thoughts on that, Councillor Gill, the suggested variation?
Happy to include that as well.
So elected members, I guess it needs to be defined what is being referred to. Are any of you just saying section 41 committees? I think ad hoc selection panels is probably not, that would be very difficult for staff because they come and go. My view is, yeah, well, but I guess that actually has to come to the mover and seconder for the variation I'm on the stick. So it could be and section 41 committees. That's my suggestion in relation to what might be legal.
Achieve.
Yeah, it depends what we are trying to achieve, really. But yeah,
it's your variation.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, I think at this point that would achieve. It would partially achieve it. So yeah, let's do that.
Okay, I'm happy to add that.
Yeah, so after in point one, after information and briefing sessions, you could say along with section 41 committees.
Yeah.
And a second variation drawn to my attention from governance is in relation to what's being referred to in point two. It's actually not the council meeting procedures, it's a code of practice for access to the council committee and information briefing session meetings documents.
Okay.
Okay. At this point, would you be comfortable removing point two? Because if we include that, it has to go to public consultation.
Okay.
And that decision would hold. So we'll start doing it without the need to amend that. Yeah. And we can just amend it next time it comes around.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, cool.
All right. So we have a variation, that variation being along with section 41 committees, and we have removed what was originally point two. Do I have leave of the meeting for those changes to occur? Okay, thank you. So, Councillor Parkin?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in
support.
Yeah,
excellent. Yes. Councillor
Lunch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I believe that elected members should avail themselves of every opportunity to hear from staff about items that they may appear, that may appear on council agendas in the future, and they should also seek to contribute to the formation of the direction of council policy and budgets. One way of doing this is attendance of elected members at information and briefing sessions convened by staff to facilitate this. Although these briefings are not mandatory, I think elected members should be encouraged to attend these sessions and if not able to catch up on what was addressed. It's true that no elected member has a perfect record of attendance at these sessions, and this is unfortunate. However, we have to ask ourselves what causes members to not be able to attend these sessions. Maybe that's because they have work commitments. Maybe it's because they are unwell. Maybe they need to care for someone who is unwell. Maybe it's because they are busy community representatives who need to take some personal time for their own mental health. Maybe it's because they need to spend time with their family on an important occasion such as a birthday or anniversary. Or more controversially,
maybe they don't find that they are able to participate fully in sessions due to the format of in-person sessions or the quality of the technology that allows them to participate online. There are many reasons that elected members are not able to participate in particular informational briefing sessions, and we have to ask, what could we do to improve this? I think that there are many strategies that we could follow to try and improve the engagement of elected members in sessions such as this, but I don't believe this motion on notice is one of them. I feel that there is an underlying implication that those that don't attend are not prioritising council enough, or that they just make a decision on a Monday or Tuesday afternoon that they can't be bothered attending. And I believe this is pretty condescending. And in fact, I find it a little bit insulting. The thought that recording attendance at these sessions and publishing them publicly in our agenda to try and embarrass members will have a positive effect is just strange. Maybe, or more insidiously, it is designed to try to delegitimise the views of those who haven't attended a session on a particular item when it comes to the chamber. Maybe it is to delegitimise the views of those who have a recent poor record of attendance for whatever reason. And I believe that that has been attempted in some of the debate on some previous motions in this chamber tonight. I say that this, as someone who is not scared of having information on my attendance published publicly, I go to great lengths to attend all information briefing sessions that I can. The ones which I haven't been able to attend to have been because I've had work commitments, I've been away, or I've had a serious event in my family. I can't help but feel that dressed up as an item to increase openness and accountability, that this motion is actually an attempt to undermine the decision-making process in this chamber. So I will oppose.
Thank you, Councillor Lynch. Anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Hammond?
So more of a question. In terms of attendance, I think you've explained that includes teams or online.
Correct.
Is there any way that the administrator can check to see if a member is online?
Only if they've got their video on, that would be by choice. Yeah, and whether they're engaging. Yeah, if the video is off, there's no definitive way
of going. Is there any way of a member switching on, starting the meeting at 6:30 and leaving it on and going and watching television? Or?
And it could be possibly Councillor Hammond, but I would put forward that I don't think anyone in this chamber would do that. I think we'd be
just wondered if there were sufficient safeguards.
I mean, it's possible, but I don't anticipate.
Final question would be, in the annual report, Audit Committee, Boundary Change Committee, the panel there, there's a report, meetings with the tenants of the report, so that information is already available, albeit not on a monthly basis. But the other one of interest is the CAP, not the Section 41 Committee. Should that be incorporated into the reporting arrangements? The CAP is a very important panel, and it's a very important panel. Why would they call that outside of that? Ask the question.
Probably. Could be considered as a separate motion. At this point, I think we'll leave it at the as is, otherwise we could workshop it all night. Fair question, though. Fair question. Would you like to speak to the motion? Anyone else like to speak to the motion? You've already spoken, seconded it.
Seconded it.
Well, you didn't speak. Speak to this. Okay, that's fine. Sorry.
Very careful with my language. I guess it was one of the things I took out of Councillor Gill's presentation of this motion was around actually gathering some data to understand where some of the gaps in what we do are. And so knowing that attendance in terms of online, number of online versus in-house duration of stay does start to fill some of the gaps. In terms of the data, we also got relation to our regularity of ordinary council meetings. So, it depending on the lens you look at it, may be seen as an insidious way to call out elected members on their attendance. But I guess it's how to use that information, and data can be grabbed and used in many different ways. So for me, there was quite a lot of, I guess, excitement and understanding. We talk a lot about consultation and collecting data and understanding behaviours so we can do better. And so I do see this as an opportunity, and we've heard a couple of options of other things to include. But at least at this point, we start to get a better understanding about how our informational briefing sessions, and now also with our Section 41 committees, how they're attended, so we can start to ask some of those questions if it's not working, and we can have some data to back up any decisions we make on why it's not working. So I do think there is some merit in this, but I absolutely can see, depending on the lens you look at it, to what its true intent is. But despite what the intent may be, I think there's some positive outcomes that can come from this.
Thank you, Councillor Cheetah. Anyone else? Councillor Sissel.
Good question. Through you.
Yes.
Members that have been granted a leave of absence, how would that be reflected in this collection of data that's published monthly? Will that be members on a leave of absence, that will be an exclusion to this, or will there be an explanatory note against Councillor Osterstock not at a briefing session? Leave of absence?
I think, and I'll ask the administration, I think it can be dealt with administratively, where there is a third column that would have leave of absence. So you'd have present, apology, leave of absence.
Yeah.
So that's perfect. Okay. Yeah, would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Gill, you're right to reply.
Thank you for electing me. I'd just like to say there was nothing insidious about anything. And in fact, I've actually had to have leave of absences from, or been absent from, information sessions I would love to attend, because I've had either a car breakdown, work's gone over time. So I do understand that we have lives, and this is actually to find out what is it that may be stopping us from attending and to try and get that 90% up. So this is all about trying to understand what is going on with our behaviour, why is it happening. Yeah, I understand that there are things that happen. You know, I've called in sick sometimes. In regards to, unfortunately, the cultural awareness, I was online. Unfortunately, I couldn't see the presentation, so it was a bit hard to get engaged, which I felt really bad about, because I actually would have loved to have been able to ask the questions of that. Hopefully our technology will eventually get to a point where if we do say usually we won't be able to make the presentations as well, as not just listening to talk. But that's for another day. So I had nothing insidious about this. I do understand that we all have busy lives and that sometimes we can't make it. But this is about trying to understand, is there something that we can do to actually improve that? And if does that mean that maybe we have less information briefings, that they go for longer, you know, but we don't know unless we have data to actually start making those decisions. And that's all it was about. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gill. With debate closed, all those in favour, please indicate. Those against, that is carried. So we move on to item 12.3. Councillor Gill, your motion in relation to faith rendered. Before you speak to that motion, I will just kind of say that I was really impressed by the report, and in particular how, I guess, the key aspects that you were referring to in your motion actually already being embedded in all of that documentation. Do you have any additional information to provide, seeing you
there? I do, that's an additional information to provide. Since the report was finalised, we have actually met with the consultant who carries out, or who will carry out, the communication board there's a trial pilot with us, that happened last week. And after sitting and meeting with this lady and learning about the communication boards, we're genuinely very excited about what that is going to bring to my new workspace. So really looking forward to coming back with a really nice, hopefully very meaningful report once the trial is complete.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. Councillor Peel, would you like to speak to your motion?
Thank you, through you, Acting Mayor. First of all, I'd actually like to thank Ms. Connor, Ms. O'Connor for her support in getting this motion together. There was a lot of stuff that happened from the time I actually wrote the original motion to actually getting this motion to the chamber, and I appreciate the support I got from Ms. O'Connor. Thank you. And it is actually exciting to see that we're doing a lot in this space already. I won't speak too much into this, given that I'm a sitter of the time. So what I would say is basically the idea of this motion is to make sure we put some money aside within our long-term financial plan and our annual business plan to ensure that once we have this trial, we have some information, that we've got money to actually spend to expand this if that's something we want to do. But it's also about making that inclusiveness for children within our council area and those visiting. I can't imagine what it would be like as a child not to actually participate in playing in the play space. I think it would be really upsetting to not be able to get included in any of those play spaces. So I'm really excited about what's been happening in our council since we had that presentation on the 14th of November last year. And so I really hope that this gets some support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Peel. Councillor Pascali, you'd like to second?
Yes, thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to thank Councillor Peel for bringing this together and for the staff for your report. I really appreciated reading about all of the work that we're doing. Quentin Cunningham was a good friend of mine, and I do miss him dearly. His play space is so special, and it's what he wanted for kids. And it's not just kids with lived experience of disability that these play spaces are important for. It's important for their siblings and for their friends. Inclusive does not mean just the person with a lived experience. Inclusive means everyone in their world who can come and play with them. And I work with clients who do inclusive play, and is such an amazing thing. And I'm so glad to hear that the council is really excited about this, because if you go to Quentin's playground, it's pretty cool. And if we can just do something like that, just one off, that would just be amazing. So thank you, and thank you, Councillor Gill.
Councillor Hammond,
question. Sure. Question. I'm not sure to Ms. O'Connor or Councillor Gill. In the report, under background, references made to the meeting on December, November, question after members of the council accessibility committee. I just wasn't aware of that. We had an accessibility committee. If both Ms. O'Connor could provide a bit more information about the operations of that group and who's on.
Is it? I was probably going to this one.
Thank you, through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Herman, you might recall not too long ago we had a workshop here in this room and we had the panel come and speak to that. I understand there is actually an email that's gone back to you this afternoon. I think the majority of the chamber was here that evening, so we do have that access and inclusion panel that is made up predominantly of community members or those in the industry that work with our staff about issues within that area. So they meet on a semi-regular basis in some respects, similar to how our former advisory groups work, where we workshop items with them. We also get feedback from them about issues that they are encountering or things that they want to raise with us through a more formal manner. So does that answer your question?
Yes, just drawing attention to the other members.
Thank you. Councillor Barton, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah, I'd like to speak in support of this motion. I think it's an excellent motion, and I think it dovetails nicely with all the work that I know that's been done around play spaces in the Adelaide Youth Council really over the last 5 years or so. So it would be wonderful to really have that reported back to this council so that we can see what's been done and what's been planned. So I support the motion.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Herman.
Just a question again, just in terms of wording. We usually have reports from the CEO rather than the administration, which is who the administration is. That could be replaced with CEO.
That's why I'm not that. We can't change this as CEO.
Yeah, I'd like to see the CEO. Pretendably, I'd like to see the CEO in there.
It's up to Councillor Gill and Councillor Scully if they'd like to seek that variation.
No, I think the administration do the work, so I'd like the administration to be before. Thank you.
From the governor's perspective, that is fine. That's good. Okay, would anyone else like to seek the motion? Councillor Gill, you're right for reply.
I don't think I need one.
Thank you. Thank you. Close all those in favour of the piece of the case. Those against? That is carried. Okay, we'll move on to item 12.4, which is Councillor Parkin's motion regarding the fabric. Would you like to move and speak to your item?
Thank you. Yes, I would. I've sort of put the CEO prepare a report to present to Council outline of this plan for fabric, which should detail how the plan for fabric is to be marketed, staffed, and what it will produce, how and what services it will offer, and include forward financial estimates for 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. The reason that I've requested this is because fabric has come at significant expense to Council, and it's likely that its running costs will incur more expense over a number of years. Fabric offers significant cultural opportunities for our region, but it also offers commercial opportunities, and the two are not mutually exclusive, and nor should they be. It also offers, I'm not saying this for an office is not the right word, but buildings such as fabric need to support themselves as much as they possibly can. We will need to be supporting fabric. I think we all understand that. But I think this is, it's a building which presents business opportunities, and that needs to be detailed. So I think for us to fully understand what we're funding and why, we need to have a look at what those operational options are. So where is the money coming in from? How much is that money likely to be? And where is the money going out? And how much is that likely to be? Potentially worst case, middle case, best case scenario, which is what you do when you forward plan an idea or an enterprise, which is what this is. So we've got an idea for something that we like to do. It's going to come at significant cost. So let's also have a look at what some of that income is going to be. What's that projected income? Where is that projected income or revenue going to come from? And how can we maximize that revenue for the benefit not only of the businesses within Fabric, or the people of Liverpool and the tourism for the district, and also to, I guess, balance our potential costs, the council. So I think it's really important that we all have visibility on this, and we understand what this is going to be for our community. From a business point of view and a financial point of view, over the next 10 years. I know a number of councillors have raised this as an issue of concern, something they'd like to understand more about, and more about, I guess, the business proposal for Fabric. So I commend the motion.
Councillor Lazar, are you wanting to second?
Yes, thank you. Mayor, I'd like to second this one. I am one of those people that has quite a little bit of concern about where Fabric is going. It's certainly an institution that this council has developed since about 2018, I think. It does have a lot of potential, but I am a little bit concerned with a council that has a turnover of around about $50 million a year. Can we afford to be totally supporting an arts institution fully with operating revenue from ratepayers? So I think it's really important that we do look at potential business opportunities and income opportunities that the Fabric can make. As Councillor Parkin said, making money is not mutually exclusive with the cultural sort of significance that this institution can have.
And I think this this motion pushes that along and gives us an idea of exactly how viable that income generating capacity is going to be and how much going forward that the council will need to put into and support for BRIC from our general operating revenue. So I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Thirlwood and Councillor Austin.
Yes, I will also be supporting the motion. I think it's really important to keep remembering that Fabric was started by a bunch of community members who got together and wanted to activate the mill. And that group were really active and they lobbied very hard. And it was only the result of many, many hours of community members that we got to a point where we're at now. I think it's really important to look at other examples like the Gallery of Murray Bridge, which has been highly successful, and I believe Ms. Rankin, who's now to Fabric, was also quite influential in building the success of the Murray Bridge Gallery. And what I've seen happen in Murray Bridge is that had really big flow-on effects to the economy of all the local businesses and the region. There are people that come from all over the state and the country to go to the Murray Bridge Gallery, and I think we can have the same thing here in Fabric. So while I acknowledge that this motion doesn't necessarily look at what impact it will have economically on the region and the area, I do think that that's a really important part of this puzzle. But I do think it would be financially prudent for us to be looking at these forward estimates and considering how it will affect the council as a whole. So that's for the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Sisson, and then Councillor Hudson.
Yes, likewise, I do support the motion. I would like to see what the long-term or short, medium and long-term future of Fabric is. My view is that it needs to be underpinned by some state, federal, even private type business. My thoughts were potentially, given that, as I understand it, the vast majority of the gallery's collections in storage, that there may be opportunities to explore with the state government regional offshoot to the, state art gallery and some of their works that are in storage displayed at Fabric in some shape or fashion. That may be an opportunity. We do have some sort of similar federally underpinned entity in the National Motor Museum at Birdwood, which is a great national asset. There may be, as I said, opportunities for us to do something with the state to get the art gallery's collection out of storage and on public display at a facility such as Fabric. There may be some potential there. Hopefully those sort of concepts can be explored.
Councillor Hudson.
Thank you. I want to thank Councillor Parkin for putting this up. I have recently reached out to the administration to sort of a meeting that we haven't sorted out yet to talk about similar sort of thing in the background of Fabric and where it's going. I've had a few conversations with community members recently who are concerned about what it will look like in local and a few community groups have reached out to me concerned that they, I don't know if their expectations are too high or if what that is, but we just want to make sure that this space that's being provided meets the expectations of these groups and not the main of volunteers who have been doing this for a really long time. The circles that I run in, I think, can be quite confused about what the goodie is going to be as well. So I think if there's a report that goes into the immediate future and the long term of the goodie, I think that would really help for locals to understand what it means for them to.
Thank you, Councillor Cheever.
I'll keep this very brief. I mentioned recently I went to the local community association meeting and there's a conversation around EV charge, right? And one of the pieces that was mentioned in there was, is EV charging a way to keep people staying and spending time in the area? Is that something Fabric facilitates businesses? Who knows? But what it did,
make obvious to me as a member going, there are regularly opportunities that aren't necessarily on our radar and may not have been present when this project happening up. So I do think this isn't necessarily, I mean, we didn't do it right and we haven't made the right diligence in committing to Fabric. It's just going, opportunities may be present, and it's absolutely worth exploring them for the long-term sustainability of this venture.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? We'll write a reply, Councillor Punkin.
Yeah, just very quickly. I just wanted to thank everyone for their comments and to comment on something that Councillor Selwood said about the impact of the community and tourism. And I worked within government in sort of arts and creative industries for three or four years. And one of the ways they measure the impact of arts and cultural institutions is things like increases in tourism, so bed nights, increase in surrounding businesses, those sorts of things. So they're often really good ways to measure if something in cultural art space is actually having the effect that we wanted to have, which is to get people to come and visit the state. So to include matrices like that might be really useful in terms of whether or not Fabric's going to do what we wanted to do moving forward. But yeah, thank you everyone for the comments. I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here, but there's also a lot of risk. And we need to make sure that we plan really well so we can maximise the opportunity in the most of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to item 12.5, another motion from Councillor Parkin, some with regard to civil bids. Would you like to, or is it a card? Is there anything new you'd like to add with regards to this?
I think there's more.
Thanks. Councillor Parkin, would you like to move and speak to your item?
Yeah, thank you very much. So I was delighted to attend a workshop earlier this year, in February, and with East Waste came and talked about what they're doing in terms of bins and recycling. You know, we were starting to talk about the decision-making of, you know, when we decide, you know, how to keep bins cleaner. There was discussion around education, and I picked up a couple of those stickers at another Adelaide Hills Council workshop a couple of years ago and put them on my bins. And for me, that's been really helpful when you sort of get to the yellow bin, you go, oh, does it go in here or green bin? And I'll just check the sticker on the top. And it sort of helps you keep your bins cleaner and it potentially reduces the amount of sort of wrong waste in the wrong. I just initially wanted to sort of go ahead and see if we could do it, and then John said, okay, we should have cost it out first. So you'll see that there's some potential costings, and we're calling for a report. There is something that I would potentially like to add into the report, and at the workshop, if you remember, East Waste mentioned that there were funds that they had earmarked to promote waste reduction. And they had yet to work out how they would spend that. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So that sort of prompted this a little bit as well. So obviously, people at East Waste have got a bunch of cash and they don't know how to spend it. Well, here might be a really great way for them to actually spend some money on reducing waste, which is what the money that they have got unspent is there to do. So perhaps we could help them with that. So that's sort of one of the reasons why I thought we might do this. So we can have a motion.
Thank you, Councillor Parkin. We have a seconder. Councillor Hux, would you like to speak to the motion?
Please. Thank you. Again, thank you, Councillor Parkin. As the waste management mobber that I am, and the council's representative on the East Waste Board, it is my duty to second this one. I have dealt with Witchkin for a few years. Great initiative, if I do say so myself. I do think that there are opportunities for us, depending on green industries and their funding and grants rounds that they bring out. They do, they used to offer a number of grants rounds to help councils divert waste from landfill and provide funding to provide their education to residents. I think there's opportunity to get East Waste on board with that as well, because they are hot on education. Robert Gregory does sometimes say that you can only educate so much, but I think that if you can shove it in people's faces by putting it on the top of their bin, then that it can't do any harm. Obviously the cost would come into it. You wouldn't want to
spend too much money on getting stickers out to people, but if you can, as I say, if you can put it right in front of people when they're physically putting things in the bin, it will most definitely help divert waste from landfill. So thank you.
Councillor Gill, you'd like to speak, and then Councillor Scully, Councillor Lutch.
I actually have a question. I understand that we're actually swapping the blue bin bins out for red bin bins, or would it then be an opportunity to actually then send the stickers with the red bin bins?
That would be a very good idea. That's because I also raised the idea that as we replace bins, we can provide them that it comes at a cost.
Sorry,
are we going to have
what bin?
Are we going to have red bin bins?
Through you, acting mayor. At this stage, we're not swapping out blue lids for red lids. It could be because there would be a bit of confusion within the community and all the marketing and education would have to change around having two different bin lids in the system. But having said that, with the proposed state government changes we're always recently announced, they will be making that mandatory. But at some stage, that will be the case where we will have to change bin table. Red lids when we replace bins or provide a new bin. So ultimately it will happen, but it can't be right now, it's not.
Thank you.
I'm going to
name
my sentence to somebody.
Yeah, you see the notion? Okay, so Councillor
Starr. Thank you. I have a question if we just have it put into the report. If we do have to, if we can't find the money externally and it does actually have to come out of our budget line, could the report please specify what we're sacrificing in order to pay for it? So what we have to give up in order to get it?
If it's part of the ABP, that would be a very holistic process as we go through the full day workshop and then consultation, etc. But
the default will come after that.
True. It would be, I guess, in that, well, we can talk about that, but I assume it would be an additional cost as part of the budget review process if we went down a path with costs. Good point. How much?
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. I did have a quick question, and it's probably perhaps almost a correction, maybe. My recollection was the workshop you were talking about, it was actually the Adelaide Hills Region of Waste Management.
Maybe it was.
Group organisation committee.
It was not that long ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Yes, it was. It was.
It was an East Waste. I'm not going crazy.
You're not.
Look, I 100% support this. I must say that the cost of $50,000 does worry me a little bit. That's a lot of money for one educational thing, and particularly we have also changing outputs to regulates as well. That does worry me a bit. So yeah, I look forward to seeing the results of this investigation, the full estimate and perhaps a calculation bank of up as well with respect to what we can get out of this if we're going to spend $50,000. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor
Cheever. Such a question. So in the analysis, it says that machines have been coming out of residents, collection from accountable services, libraries, etc. Is that something that's an additional cost to Adelaide Hills Council through East Waste to have access to those, or is that included as part of the service that we pay?
Mr. McCartan?
Through you, Acting Mayor, that's included part of the East Waste car arrangements we have with them.
No matter how many we send.
I think they would get a bit upset if we started wanting like 27,500. But car do one be support will provide through the libraries, community centres, etc. There's no charge.
Councillor
Boyd.
Hi, thanks
through
you. Just going to ask, why will we be enforced to change to red lids?
So yeah, I've been there to be consistent with national standard.
Actually, international standards. And oh, sorry, and a follow up question: what will we do in our blue bins? Will they all
be recycled? Be recycled. From the not spraying in the land. Which bin? All right. Now, just for if we come back to the motion itself, does anyone else have anything they'd like to contribute to the panel? So a lot of questions, but they're kind of getting outside the scope of the motion itself. Okay, Councillor Parham, you need a right of reply?
Yes, I do, just quickly. I think I agree those numbers, they're just estimates at the moment, so we actually don't have the real numbers. So I think once we get the real numbers, then we can truly have a debate about dollars and impact. But we also need to balance those numbers with things that we say, because we need to remember that East Waste charges us too for, you know, stuff that goes to landfill. So there's potential savings that we might make out of changes to behaviour. And that was what the workshop was about, was talking about those potential changes. We also need to remember that East Waste have some funding that we might potentially be able to talk to them about. And when Green Industries came, I thought that they said that they would provide the stickers, but maybe not. Okay. Yeah, in your report, you sort of mentioned that they would do some design, but it's already been designed.
It would just be with our logo specifically.
Oh, with our logo specifically. Okay, so I guess I'll await the report with interest, and once we've got that, then we can sort of have a look at some of the finer issues.
Thank you. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. As against, that is carried. We will move on to item 12.6, Councillor Pascali's motion on notice. Would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, thank you. And through you, Mayor, I did circulate an addition to this motion this afternoon, and that was to.
12.6.
Well, I don't know what it's 12.6. Also, I don't know if it is 0.5 because the motion, it's a diplomatical thing, but the motion says that the National Assembly calls on the Australian Government to, and that's those 4 points. And then this fifth point is an additional element, but it's not actually in line with that sentence. Did I just make sense then?
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily 0.5, but it's.
So it would just be a. Okay. Well, they think that. Which is good. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move the motion as printed on the screen. So far this year, 14 women have been murdered, and we are keeping up with our average of one woman every week. The City of Glenorchy, Hilltops Council, Moreton Bay, Central Goldfields Shire, City of Port Adelaide, Enfield, Ipswich City Council, Tweed Shire Council, City of Canterbury, Bankstown, Woodhill Logan City Council, City of Parramatta Council, Richmond Valley Council, City of Ballarat, Banyule City Council, Moonee Valley Council. These are the communities who have so far this year been impacted by gendered homicide. And we know it will not stop here. Across Australia every 2 hours, a woman aged over 15 is hospitalised due to family and sexual violence. Women are 3 times more likely than men to experience violence from an intimate partner, with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women experiencing disproportionate rates of violence, which is often more severe. Family and domestic violence is predominantly used by a male perpetrator against a female victim. However, a family and domestic violence officer would not exclude the experiences of people who do not identify as male or female or have heterosexual relationships. We at Adelaide Hood Councils are not passive bystanders. It is a long road, but we have started our journey. With this motion, I would like to support those in the local government association who are trying to move this from being a watching brief to a tangible action. I've spoken with the Local Government Association of South Australia and our staff here to ensure this motion endorses the work that they would like in this space and not create something new. By establishing a family and domestic violence officer in every local government association across Australia, we can not only expedite the implementation of programs and change required to enact the Australian government's goal of ending violence against women and children in a generation, but we can also say to those communities who are being impacted right now, we see you. We are not helpless in this. When I went to the Zonta vigil for the 16 days of activism last November at Windy Point with Mayor Wisdom, Councillor Boyd, Councillor Cheetah and Councillor Mudge, I met Mitchell Council Mayor Dr. Horace Ross. At the end of the vigil, she said she felt so powerless to do anything. We had a great conversation about not being powerless to end violence against women and children in our communities. Mayor Wisdom and I spoke to her at length about how we had implemented the Our Watch Toolkit here at Adelaide Hills Council. Imagine how many other councils across Australia feel the same and did not know where to start. By having an officer in each state equipped and able to support them, we could really make an impact. Across Australia, in our mothers and babies groups, in our men's sheds, our community centres, in our libraries, our sporting associations, with our workers out in the field, imagine what conversations we could have, the actions we can take, and the lives we could save. The AOGA is calling for motions that deliver on their core goals, and under community services, this motion would help with the programs to address disadvantage to reduce poverty and homelessness. Gender violence increases a woman's risk into poverty, is the number one cause of homelessness among women, and creates disadvantage by halting women's ability to participate equally in our society. The Australian government has set an ambitious goal, and who better place to assist with its delivery than councils embedded deep at the grassroots of community. What we are doing here in this council is important work. Let us not be the only one in Australia doing it. Let us use our voice, our leadership and our tenacity to take what we are doing and ask the National Congress to endorse real action that would make meaningful change. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Pascali. So I'd like to second the motion. Councillor Gill, would you like to speak?
Thank you, through that mayor. My experiences with domestic violence have been already spoken about in this chamber previously. I'd like to congratulate Councillor Pascali on her motion and her continued fight for an end to domestic violence, and I wholly support this motion going up to the National General Assembly to make this a national-wide campaign. I've seen the great work that's done within this council, and I'd like to see that go right across our nation. I hope everyone endorses this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Gill. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Selwyn?
I've just got a question, please. Sort of two questions in one. Were we already planning to send a representative to Canberra for this event, and have we already decided who will go?
That would need to come to the chamber because it's over a certain amount due to the costs of travelling the state. I did actually ask that question yesterday to Ms. Gill, that given the number of queries she's had today for this meeting, I'm not sure if she's found out exactly when that will come to the chamber, but yes, it would. But I think it's in July, the start of July, so I assume it'll be a couple of months before that. Yeah. And we do have the option of seeing more than one person. Yeah. Councillor Cheetham?
Thank you, Mayor. When Councillor Pascali brought the religion worship hours to get better Hills Council, for one of those first times I got to stop and go, well, what's council's role in this space? And you know, as a first term councillor, there's so many different things that come across your phone calls and emails and going, well, what is our role in this space? And honestly, at the time thought, like, this is great, but how far does it go? What impact can it have in Adelaide Hills Council? What can it have in my other council? And it sort of, I guess, had that sort of well-meaning sentiment, but it was really hard to envisage how it becomes tangible. And I think what this motion presents to me, I guess, is that next step makes it feel more tangible. It's less of, it feels like less of a framework, less of an idea, and more like something that can be put into action. And it's not easy when you're tackling things that do at times feel like there's no end in sight. And I know that that's something that many that fall into that gender-based violence, women, children, and men can sometimes feel. And so I commend this motion for the fact that it really starts to put this on platform outside of fragmented areas of state, local, federal government, and I think has a real grassroots opportunity to address this at the forefront rather than getting caught up in what can be a quite bureaucratic process. So thank you so much, Councillor Pascal, for bringing this to the table. And again, I commend this motion.
Councillor Clarkin?
Yeah, thank you. I'd also like to commend the motion. I read an article in the newspaper this morning saying that in South Australia, child and youth health services, our referrals to kids living out of home and in out of home care is increasing, and that the rest of the nation is actually decreasing. South Australia, we're not doing so well. And it's costing us, it's costing our families, it's costing us socially, it's also costing us financially. And this could be one way that we could find another way to assist some of that. So I realise that at the moment we're just putting a recommendation up and saying we support this, but I just think we support this. So I can have a motion.
Thank you. Councillor Sarah, would you like to speak?
May I ask another question?
Yes.
I'm just looking at the wording of this, and I'm interested in the case and advice around sort of the first part. There's this National General Assembly called the Australian Government too, but then under point C and D, it says that this program be jointly funded by Commonwealth and state governments. But under my understanding, the Australian government wouldn't be able to compel the state government to fund something. So I'm just interested in some advice because I wouldn't want this to get to the National General Assembly and then be voted down because of the technicality that they come up. Actually, the Australian government has no power over whether the state government funds the company.
Yes,
thank you, and through you acting there, the that wording was advised by staff who have been working with the local government association. But the next step from this is for the National Assembly or the NGA to actually firstly approve it and say that they will put it on the agenda, and then also to work with that wording. If there is scope, that was the advice that I was given, that it would be a role that was funded, it would be bipartisan funding. That's the advice that I was given. We can change that now, but I would probably want to take the advice from those that are actually working at a higher level, able to see them just us.
So a minor recommendation that we're considering is just changing under point C, that this role should instead of will. There's a bit of flexibility around that. And then under point four, that this program should be jointly. Is that okay?
I'm happy with those changes.
So, Councillor Gill, are you happy with that variation? Leave the meeting to approve that variation. Thank you very much. So you didn't speak, Councillor Selwyn. Would you like to?
No.
It's fine. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? And Councillor Pascoe, you're right with your reply.
No, I was just going to make my first, this is only the first step in actually getting this to the agenda that we now submit it, and we'll see where it goes from there. So thank you.
Thank you. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Okay. Item 12.7, and Councillor Gill, your on motion on those. Would you like to speak? Ms. Atkins, do you have any additional or new information?
No, I don't.
Councillor Gill, would you like to speak, introduce and speak to your item?
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. As that day is a very important day for me, this was quite emotional when I found that the state government was actually looking at removing Anzac Day from the public holidays bill. 2023. Needless to say, my first motion was quite a bit more angrier than this one. I also have a bit of family history of actually fighting state governments, particularly this state government in South Australia, not just fighting personally, but state governments of South Australia in the past. In 1993, the state government decided that because Anzac Day fell on a Sunday, that the march would actually be held on the Monday public holiday, as it was held then under the old Act. My father, being a veteran of the Vietnam War, was not very happy about this, and so he, with his mother and his elder sister, decided to march on the Sunday anyway. So they got a banner together and they marched the route. They came across some police officers who then said, "What are you doing?" And my dad said, "I'm marching on Anzac Day in my full uniform."
and the police said, we'll escort you. And they went past Torrens Parade Ground. Some diggers who were actually playing tour saw them and asked if they could join. And my dad said, of course you can, it's Anzac Day. When he got to the Cross of Remembrance, he read out a speech, and I'll read this to you. I found this in his documents when after he passed away, and I'm going through them. And I think it says something from a veteran of how we should all think about Anzac Day. And it says, so here we are, some 78 years after the event, and not permitted to express our love for what our grandfathers did on this day, because our ordinary are handed down by people who were not there, and perpetrated by others who are even more remote from the event. Let us say naught of the rough, the push by non-combatants for a new flag and a new republic. Leave us instead contemplate that day on which we became a nation. Let us feel the pain and the glory of the birth through fire and a small isolated colony that held its head high and showed the world that faith can triumph over adversity, that sense of country can overcome selfishness, that courage can forge a people. Let us rejoice in our inheritance, for these were exceptional forbearers, such as have rarely been seen in the awards or in the annals of history, and only then at moments of great crisis. Their strong auras hold us yet, sorry, their strong arms, my father's handwriting is quite atrocious sometimes. Their strong arms hold us yet, they cradle us in their compassion and love. They offer us, as did their Lord, a salvation of the spirit. Can we deny their sacrifice? Is it our place to scorn what they have offered? Do they hold second place to the materialistic minded? Their values were God, King, country, and family. How many of these values are with us now? Give praise to them. They serve us well. Give thought to how well we are serving them, and make it not a mere token gesture that lest we forget. Ian Condon, Adelaide, 25th of August 1993. So I find myself now here wanting to now reaffirm our commitment to our diggers, to our veterans, past, present, and make sure that we commit to all of our service organisations, RSL and others, that we will hold Anzac Day sacred as a community organisation and as a council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gillen. Just again to draw the elected members' attention to, you did move a motion with the removal of that word dishonourable, is that
yes.
Correct? Yes. Okay, so it is as printed on the screen. We have a second there. Councillor Hand, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, at this stage.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak in relation to this motion? Councillor Selby?
Yes, I'd like to move an amendment, please. The amendment would be after the words past and present in number two, for a full stop, and strike out all words after the full stop.
Okay, yep, so I'm happy to accept that as an amendment if you'd now like to speak specifically to that amendment.
Yes, I will. I'm fully supportive of reaffirming our support to Australian veterans. I think it's really important. All four of my grandparents served in wars, and my father-in-law was a Vietnam vet. I personally believe in peace and non-violence, but I do recognise that the service that has been given by all veterans is really important. The reason that I'm striking out that part of the motion is that I do not believe that it was the government's intent to remove Anzac Day from that bill. I was sitting in the chamber when it was debated in the Legislative Council, and I do feel that it was actually an oversight, and that's why the government's gone back and now reinserted the names of all public holidays into that legislation. So I do support the intent of the motion, but I don't support the idea that we are saying that the state government tried to remove that from the legislation.
Thank you. Do we have a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Mudge, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, I support this amendment. I'm very happy to support all veterans, but I'm not willing to support a motion that is fundamentally based on mistruth that's been whipped up by the media and dishonest politicians for faith political gain. The government legislation was never intended to cancel Australia Day or show disrespect for veterans, and I think it's almost an insult to the people who proposed it to suggest that it was. The following quote from the RSL SA Northern Territory President David Peterson explains the situation pretty succinctly. It is important to note that the Anzac Day public holiday never existed in a formal sense under the Holidays Act 1910. The Anzac Day public holiday was never a formal or legal term for the public holiday on the 25th of April. The new legislation, despite suggestions to otherwise, was not intended to and did not strip Anzac Day of its name. Rather, the legislation is for the administration of public holidays regarding industrial relations law, i.e. how much someone gets paid for working on Anzac Day. Previously, the public holiday was able to move depending on if it fell on a weekend. This created an Anzac Day long weekend, which we know lowers participation in important priority events on Anzac Day, when the purpose of a public holiday on Anzac Day is to participate in commemorative events. Clearly, the controversy over this has been concocted to try and embarrass the state government at the expense of veterans, and may well have caused many of them distress for no, absolutely no reason at all, except for the self-serving interests of those with a political axe to grind. This is clearly a case of trying to politicise the chamber with partisan political arguments, this one being of the worst kind because it's not true. So I support the amendment. I'm very happy to support our diggers, our Anzac Day. On Anzac Day, I've attended many Anzac Day ceremonies representing council and the mayor. My uncle, great uncle Ted, died on the Dakota track. I have respect. I think it is really crazy to say that what happened in Parliament was somehow an attempt to cancel Anzac Day and just disrespect veterans.
Anyone else like to speak in relation to the amendment, Councillor Oster?
Thank you, and with your indulgence, it was remiss of me not to declare a general interest in this item, given the fact that I am a former serving military person. I served for 9 years in the Australian military in my younger years, a lot younger years, so I like that. So I declare a general interest in this matter. I'll remain in the chamber, I'll debate the matter, and I'll vote on the matter. I support the amendment. My reading of this matter was that it was an unfortunate administrative oversight that was quickly corrected by the state Labor government. And so I'll be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor. So, would anyone else like to speak specifically to the amendment? Yes, Councillor Allen.
I guess I had declare a general interest in the matter. I am from the executive of the Comraca Narrowsill sub-branch. I will stay in the chamber, I will debate the items, and I will vote on that.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Pascoe.
Thank you, Andrew, your Acting Mayor. I support the amendment because Anzac Day is a very complex day for me. I spent a whole year interviewing veterans 9 to 5, or it was actually 8 to 6, 5 days a week, and I have had the privilege of speaking to rats at school, right through to personnel who had come back from Afghanistan, and Anzac Day is a complex day for our veterans, and I support this motion because I support them. I just don't feel comfortable with it
I mean, that politicisation of the political aspect, I really want to just disrespect our serving president, both past and present.
Thank you, Councillor Pascoe. Would anyone else like to speak to the amendment? Councillor Huxley, just in public.
I support the amendment. I like the idea that we're taking the politics out of this. But does that then mean that these groups are just going to get a random letter from the mayor and the CEO saying, we're like, what are you doing?
To a degree, yes, but I don't see that to be a bad thing.
You'll cut it out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually think good point. Leaving up hands that day would be good to engage with everyone involved. Yeah. Okay, so no one else would like to speak to the amendment, so I'll put the amendment. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So we now have the motion as amended. And with regard to that, we've only had Councillor Gill speak, because Councillor Hammond didn't speak at any that point in time. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion as amended? Councillor Gill, you're right for one.
Thank you, and I welcome the amended motion. I just would like to point out that as that day was actually in the Holidays Act of 1910, under the 1683A as its own holiday. So that's just a minor correction.
Thank you. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So we have two reports and a confidential one. Would people like a so someone to move that way? Councillor Chair, Second Councillor Park, all those in favour to indicate. That is carried unanimously. We'll reconvene at 8:50. Just draw our attention back to the agenda. We have item 13.1, a revised policy for community consultation with regards to management of built heritage. And Mr. Zabo, do you have any additional new information you'd like to provide the chamber?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I did receive some questions regarding the item and would like to address a couple of those for the benefit of the council, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Firstly, thank you to Councillor Mudge for your question regarding how does the policy address what I've coined preemptive demolition. I've heard that is self-explanatory, but if it's not, I'm happy to answer and clarify. But the preemptive demolition of proposed heritage buildings. So the short answer to that is the policy does not provide direct right to it. Rather, it refers to the PDI Act, where early commencement proceedings under Section 78 provide a legislative means to address it, if that is a genuine concern. So I guess, in summary, the policy opts for flexibility ahead of prescription, in order to provide scope for council to respond appropriately to the sensitivities of each code amendment and then respond effectively to the community gate and the charter. Happy to take any follow-up questions on that. And thank you to Councillor Selwood for your question regarding the scope of the policy and addressing non-built cultural heritage. And so the scope of this policy is narrow. It only provides guidance to the interactions of built heritage and the planning legislation, and also what council's role is in supporting heritage place owners. Other forms of culturally significant heritage aren't contemplated by the policy, but in this regard, council may want to consider its policy options. It's noted, though, that any such policy may have a range of different implications, legislative and otherwise, and it would also cross potentially the range of areas across the organisation. So it's considered that amendments of that nature would be pushing the policy beyond sort of the scope it was originally formulated for. Happy to take any follow-up questions on those or any other matters.
Yes, Martin.
I do have a question. Thank you. And I apologise for not getting the opportunity to ask earlier. I did read through the policy. The change in the policy in general, it seems to be tightening the policy. In general, it looked like it was offering more protections and scope for some of our heritage buildings. I do know, though, that under the current planning policy, so let's say, for example, I buy a block of land and it's got an old house on it, but let's say beginning of settlement sort of house on it, and I decide that's a very small house, it's not big enough for me, and I want to knock it down and put a bigger house. So it's my understanding that I get planning approval for my bigger house. But if that smaller old house isn't heritage listed,
I don't have to get approval to knock that down. Is that true?
Thank you, Councillor Parkin, through you acting there. If I could answer that quickly, the new system has streamlined demolition. And so if something isn't heritage listed, there's actually a pathway there through the new system where demolition isn't even a consideration with an assessing authority, which is one of the, I guess, larger changes that came through, but sort of went under the radar as well as new systems implemented.
And if someone wants to move something in relation to this item, Councillor Munch.
Yes, I'd like to thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to move this motion as printed. And if I could speak to it very briefly, I think this council's commitment to local heritage continues to be very good. We have a significant number of local heritage places within this council, and we have some plans to declare some more, particularly in the Valley Ward, I guess. And I think this forms a basis for continuing forward in that area. I'm pleased to see that the Heritage Incentive Program section has remained. I think it's something we should, we have tried in the past, and maybe perhaps we didn't do it quite the right way and dropped it, but I think it's something we should definitely. And I look at having a go out again at some stage, having some local heritage grants. In fact, that's one of the things that a number of people involved in heritage places have actually mentioned, and that was if council could provide some grant funding for them to help them to manage the those particular, the restoration of those particular properties. These properties, by giving them a local heritage classification, we're sort of almost saying that they've sort of become, to a certain extent, public property. And I think it's incumbent on us, if we're going to do that, provide the owners of those properties some assistance in doing that. And I'm also pleased to see that we have some other classifications we can. Well, I think there was some stuff in the code previously can't remember the names of them, but they were designated character areas, basically, and that continues in the code as well. So I commend the policy of motion.
Thanks, Councillor Munger. I did ask the question about the fund actually, and then it'd be likely to be, I guess, re-implemented. And the feedback was that we aligned quite nicely with any essential code amendment, which we had a workshop on last week. And I think that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Councillor Parkin, you'd like to second?
Yeah, I would like to second, and I'd like to speak to it as briefly if I could, and maybe even ask another question. If I can't do that, that's okay. I'll ask it later. But this looks generally really good and like a tightening of the policy and clarification. So I'd like to support it in that regard. But I'd also like to, I know that we're going to have a workshop around the planning in May. Is that correct, Mr. Zalo?
Through you, Mayor? Yes, it will be.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, through you. Excellent. And things like character and amenity, this sort of heritage is bound up in all of that. And while I support this policy, I do have concerns that under the current planning guidelines, buildings that formed part of our colonial heritage are not automatically protected. And somebody can just get a planning approval for the house without any consideration for what they're demolishing in order to put that new house in place. For example, about 2 years ago on Garrett Street or Garrett Road, which was my place, you know, maybe there's a couple of guys. Great, thank you, Crescent. There was a little cottage that would have been part of the original 100 Stirling, and sat there for years, and then it got us to walk past my dogs every day. Beautiful cottage, part of the original Stirling, how nice. It got sold, and I assumed that someone would do it up and make it something lovely and it would be, but no, it got knocked over, and there's a massive baby gen inside and just popped in its place. So there was no protections for that cottage, because the owner hadn't designated it heritage, because obviously the owner wanted to sell it, get the most money they could. But when you start to knock things over that are part of our history, then you start to slowly erode the character and amenity of where we live, and in many ways the reason that people live here. So while I do support this motion, I also, this is something I'd like to explore at a future workshop, how we can, I guess, encourage the livability of our area while making sure we protect what's important about our area. So I support the motion, but I look forward to exploring some aspects of it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hudson, and Councillor Selwood.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have a question about whether the administration needs specs if to put up in a tricky spot at all with the Mount Torrens group, who have presented to us a number of times, who are very complimentary of Mr. Szabo at the Discover Play Bike Way the other weekend and the conversations that I believe you have been having with them. At some stage, they quite liked you, but whether this will open us up to criticism, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but about all of the expectations that they have around the Mount Torrens Township and what they would like to see happen.
Through you up in there. Thank you, Councillor Foxer. The Mount Torrens community are quite active at the minute, and we have been having discussions there. Just around, a contemporary approach to management of what is our own state heritage area. So they are quite unique in that their designation falls under the State Heritage Places Act, which is separate from where this policy is sort of directed, which is more of the PDI Act and what council's jurisdiction is in terms of bringing local heritage places online through the planning and design code or heritage areas or character areas as well. So I think I can't comment for the group, of course, but I think maybe that it's more of a separate issue given that they fall under a different legislation and they're governed by different provisions so slightly different, but happy to take any questions from them about it if there are concerns.
Councillor Hill.
Thank you. So reading this policy, it became quite clear to me that there's a really large part of heritage that's being not dealt with in this policy. As Mr. Szabo mentioned, I did ask some questions around cultural heritage and how this fits, because this policy only deals with built heritage. And the part of this policy that made me question that, particularly part 2.1.4, which talks about promoting council's built heritage and the contribution it makes to the cultural identity, community, sense of place, amenity and economy of the Adelaide Hills. And then under the policy statement, 4.5 says the council is committed to raising awareness among the Adelaide Hills community of the importance of heritage preservation and seek opportunities to celebrate and promote the council's built heritage and the contribution it makes to the Adelaide Hills as a place to live, work, visit and do business. And I think it's really important that we do both of those things, the cultural heritage as well as built heritage. So I think I'm probably foreshadowing that there'll be a motion on notice around looking at a policy for cultural heritage at some point in the future. And I will be supporting this built policy, knowing that there's a potential for us to look at cultural heritage separately.
Thank you. I think it would be something well worth looking at, given that I've talked about it just earlier with some of the staff, that although we don't have a lot of Aboriginal people in this area living currently, there is a lot of cultural heritage, particularly with the natural environment, something that we could look at ways of protecting. Would anyone else like to speak to this motion? No? So I'll provide a reply, Councillor Munch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just wanted to make a few comments that were brought up in the debate. Maybe just to clarify, the designation of what is a local heritage item is actually a council responsibility. It's not the owner's responsibility. So by doing that, we actually are protecting something. And if something that should be a local heritage item is not a local heritage item, it's actually because council hasn't identified it and said that it's a local heritage item. And I do have some concern that some of the studies that have been done in the Valleys Ward area of the council have been around for a long time now, since the late 90s, and it's taken us a long time, you know, 25 years, to actually do something about them. And at any time during that period, they weren't designated as a local heritage item or a state heritage item.
They're not gone. That's right.
Demolish them.
Yeah.
And that's a real issue. So I'm really supportive of the fact that we're getting on and moving forward with our amendment to the PDI. The other thing that I wanted to respond to was the comparison between cultural heritage and built heritage. I agree we need to recognise our cultural heritage more. And as the acting mayor said, there are a significant number of Aboriginal rock paintings in this area that I think deserve some consideration or protection somehow. But they're not covered by this. The built heritage. Just because we this doesn't cover cultural heritage doesn't mean that it's not significant. It is addressing the built heritage of our area, which is a really important contributor to the hills character, which sort of said is going to be the top of our strategic plan, basically. So I commend you.
Thank you. The debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. We'll move on to item 13.2, proposed North Summit land purchase. And we have a conflict of interest with people in Red. So I'll start with Councillor Munch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm declaring a general conflict of interest on this item. I'm baptised and confirmed as a candidate on the member of the adjacent parish of Stirling. I was at one stage an ordination candidate for the Anglican Church and also a member of the Synod of the Diocese of Adelaide. So I was actually on the body the distance being purchased from. So with that in mind, and it's significant, potentially a significant decision on a significant amount of money, I'm going to leave the chamber.
Thank you, Councillor Chair.
I didn't mention this before, but I'm also going to bring a conflict of interest, a general conflict of interest. I'm now asking the chamber, and I'm having an officer within the Eastern Run CFS group, and that particular brigade that will be beneficiary of that land through their leasing arrangements. So I just think it's prudent to leave me.
Thank you. And Ms. Stones, do you have any new or additional information to provide?
Nothing to add, Acting Mayor.
No worries. Councillor Hammond, you'd like to move?
I'll move the recommendation in the spot in the amended form.
Okay. How are we?
Yes, the 0.6 I've added in to the CEO consulting Northern Summit CFS Brigade angle of the full committee in regard to configuration of any potential car parking spaces. And that's quite an amendment. I'll move that and I'll speak to the speaker. Right, this is not as bad as the heritage study in the Valley Board, but this one's been around for about 4 years. The Diocese, the Anglican Church, and the council have had a bit of discussion over land. A couple of parcels, the Charleston Cemetery program snake is to be arranged there with the council and church in the Brackey Cemetery, another similar one, Woodside Cemetery in the church. Now this one is further away, but it does have a history of council encroaching on their land. We have to do something about that. Council considered that a proposal back in 2022, where we're going to buy a substantial piece of land, about 2,700 square metres. Council resolved that was too much and asked the staff to negotiate a smaller portion of land, which would still accommodate the encroachment and retreat of the sewers emanated from there. So what we have before us now is firstly half the land in area and half the land in in cost as well. In the report, it refers to car parks. Now, that's always been an issue in that area, and I'm sure if Councillor Grant is here, he would be taking the rein on this. We need to provide safe car parking. In the report, there are a couple of options mentioned. I mentioned that there's no budget set aside for car parking. And two options. One is option one is $5,000, which is operating expensive, but the more elaborate one is option two, which is $45,500. They both provide 8 or 9 car parks. So we need to have a look at that. There's no budget reason made for it either. So the addition that I put in there, that the users of that site, the CFS and the hall committee, have been consulted about what their views are on providing adequate parking for the use of that site. In terms of cost, after the staff are consulted, I would hope that it's done in time, perhaps a resolution of what is the best outcome for parking on that site is, and that a budget provision could be provided in the next annual business plan. It may not have timed that efficiently, but at least members are aware that a project like this for car parking, safe car parking on that site, is in the wind. I recommend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Hearn. Councillor Parkin, you want to second?
Yes, I'd like to second the motion, Secretary. This is, as Councillor Hearn has flagged, this issue's been around for a while now, and this is a better outcome for Council. Financially, we'll be buying less land for less money. And that's a good thing. So I commend the motion. Thanks.
Would anyone else like to speak in relation to this motion? I assume no need for a reply. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. Is carried unanimously. We can just get Councillor Mudge and Councillor Cheetah back in the room. Thank you very much. So we have no administration reports, no correspondence for noting. I'll provide an opportunity for questions without notice, but I'll just wait for a minute. Do councillors to return? Mr. McArthur, with regard to the question notice, so there were 3 questions on notice, one in relation to fees associated with waste, and Mr. McArthur would like to just clarify one of the answers, which will be amended for the final minutes, and then I'll open up questions without notice.
Could be acting there, and I'm just in relation to the question 2 in regard to the solid waste levy.
So it's page 75 on your agenda, if anyone wants to refer to the specifics.
Yep. There's 2 small errors in that table, which has had a bit of flow effect to some of the other figures provided. So I just want to clarify the record. So the errors relate to the column on the right-hand side, 2023 July to December inclusive. You can see there the landfill waste tonnes is reported as 4,280. That's actually overstated. It should be 3,600. And the very next figure below it, the solid waste levy costs shown as 417,000 is actually understated and should be 448,000. Those 2 small errors then have flow-on effects on the total cost, which is 576,000, as shown in your agenda. That should now be 607,000. And then finally, it also impacts the percentage figures down the bottom of 72 and 28, which should be 74 and 26% respectively. So I apologise for those errors. I'm not sure what happened there, but I just wanted to correct the record.
All right, thank you very much. That'll be interesting. Does anyone have a question without notice?
Yes. So yeah, it's actually a question on notice in relation to the question on notice regarding that mayor's seeking costs, and that amount was printed. I just wanted to ask, does that include unpaid invoices?
There is no.
Oh, okay. So they paid them before we've given approval for them to be paid.
I'm just following on from that. Does that amount include HR expenses, or are the HR expenses being taken out?
I think again you can answer these sort of questions or ask these sort of questions by email. I think it would be more appropriate. Does anyone have any questions without notice that don't need confidence?
Okay,
no?
Sorry, I
thought that too. Do anyone have a motion without notice? No, so we'll move on to items or reports. 18.1, council member functions or activity on the business of council. I'll probably, given the time, we'll, and then by exception, have people speak to it, otherwise we'll move on. Reports.
Sorry.
Yeah.
A number of us attended the Stirling Community Forum.
Sure. So I will make the point that it's becoming quite common when people are trying to add items at the meeting itself with regard to what you attended. If you would like something to be included in the minutes, I encourage you to forward that to the administration in advance. I will say that for the community forum on this instance, that myself, Councillor Boyd, Councillor Parkin, Councillor Cheetah, Councillor Osterstock and Councillor Mudge all attended that forum. Okay. Are there any reports of members, officers, of council representatives, external?
I would normally submit this a bit late. I attended a special meeting for the River Management Authority on Thursday evening by Zoom. And we finally made a selection for the custodian member of the board. That one will come to the council in due course for ratification.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. In line with time, we'll just talk about a couple of key items. And through the acting mayor, had very good discussions with Mr. Kutsantonis and Dan Freeman just about the Valhalla Junction Road matter. They are looking at, and I met with them with Mr. Waters to talk about the drainage issue there, stormwater drainage issue. And what they're looking at doing is for council to come up with a fee proposal, a cost proposal, and they're willing to entertain some sort of joint funding. As you probably be aware, we've got $200,000 in the budget at the moment to spend there. What we're looking at doing is seeing if they could augment that amount to get a more elegant long-term solution in that area. Talking about budgets, my focus with the executive team at the moment is on the business plan and long-term financial plan. And of course, as council deliberated about approaching the budget with a operating surplus, so we're working on that for this year and of course for next year. I'm happy to take any questions on those two items.
Questions? Okay, we'll move on to reports of the committee. So 19.1, we do have Councillor Stephen Hannell, Minister. So Councillor Landry, happy to move.
Yeah, speak to that meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to draw Council's attention to section 12.2 of the minutes, where it says the panel discussed, this is following our ordinary business, we just have some discussions about policy issues, and it says that the panel discussed the provisions of the code regarding guidance on the appropriate size and scale of childcare facilities and asked that Council gives consideration to having discussions with Plan SA in additional policy to provide clarity on the appropriate scale of childcare facilities of neighbourhood type zones and associated car parking requirements. So we believe that the code should provide a bit more guidance in that area. That's worth considering.
Thank you. I have a second there just to receive in 8 minutes. Councillor Cheetah, all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. I note all the committee committee minutes, COPIP minutes will be considered in confidence, and the boundary change committee minutes. So we'll move to confidential items. That is carried unanimously, so we are now out of confidence. So I'll close the meeting at 9:27, and our next meeting on 26th at 30 p.m. Thank you very much.